Chapter 5. Machinations are starting to show. The news played in almost every hotel room.
Is expected to hit tonight, sometime before midnight. All residents of Cowtip should avoid the docks and evacuate to the nearest village shelter. Fisher's Paradise Shelter is expected to be...
Dahlia had barely been awake as she was listening to the TV. If Lahara had not helped her get set, she might not have even made it to the room after their night of exploring and detailing the city. Alexander had tagged along with them from location to location, often breaking away to ask questions of what appeared to be staff or locals at each place. In a separate room, Lahara was preparing herself for breakfast. As she had planned the night before, she'd like to eat across the street again to see what their offers were. She struggled to remember Dahlia's room number, but wondered if it was best to wait for her in the lobby, where they'd met up the day before for their dinner meal. Lahara wondered if she should call Alexander to meet them, or if they should all meet up again later in the day. She was definitely interested in the dress he promised to make. He had an air about him that seemed to remind her of her past. Setting out for breakfast, she barely avoided a collision with a smelly, athletic-looking man who seemed to be completely unaware of her presence. His mind was set, and his body followed. She thought nothing of it as he entered a room down the hall and continued on her current itinerary. Dahlia was a floor below, so she felt like taking the stairs to the next floor before taking the elevator the rest of the way down. It was luck that she happened to see Dahlia exiting her room just as she came out of the stairwell. They waved to each other, Dahlia still tired.
Leaving already?
Candy turned around to answer Kshaxa.
I have some things I'd like to do that involve me going to the city.
What might those things be?
Whisk was tossing an unused log to Shanaga, who'd bring it back, pretending to give it back to Whisk, but it was all a feint. Shen's real objective was to get Whisk to chase after him, which ended in a tug-of-war which seemed to be equally satisfactory to Shen.
You guys heard about the hunter who's looking for his friend, right?
Yeah, actually.
No. What's up with that?
Whisk gave up the struggle, which led to Shen giving up his attempts at play. Kshaxa filled him in.
There's a reward out for anyone who finds this hunter's friend, and the group he was traveling with.
I'm heading to the city to search.
Wait. I may have something for you.
Kshaxa walked towards her, pulling out a piece of paper.
Shen, looks like this place may be a bit different than we expected.
Candy took the paper and opened it.
What's this?
Liban gave it to me. He said he knew some people here in the city. A few of them came to him for abilities. This was everyone in the group that he knew of at the time. At the bottom is Liban's phone number. If I were you, I'd give him a call and ask him if he knows where you should start looking.
He looked at Whisk, then back to Candy.
I don't have time to look for them, but Liban thought it would be a good idea for me to know who they were in case I ran into them. I wrote my phone number on the back of it, in case you need to ask me or let me know something about him. Sorry about my handwriting. I don't get a lot of practice.
Whisk was laughing.
Ha! I bet mine's worse.
Thank you, Kshaxa.
She was a little uneasy thanking him.
Whisk, if you don't know about the reward for the group, why did you come here?
To be honest.
He gave Shen a hefty petting, fluffing his fur up.
We were trying to make a home here. This place seemed remote enough that it'd suit our needs perfectly.
Kshaxa didn't mean to make him feel bad about it.
Well, you happened to pick a poor time. People are coming from everywhere for the rewards.
Rewards?
Candy wondered if it was a slip of the tongue.
Be careful in the city. There's a reward out for Shivra's head. I'll bet that dangerous cooks from all over are coming to make a pass at him. That's why I need to hurry and see his Nen in action. I'll have plenty of opportunities to see him, I bet. But I don't want him to be killed before I find him.
I appreciate that.
Candy shifted her focus and tone.
Whisk, would you like to accompany me? Oh, and Shen too, of course.
Well, I want to avoid groups of people, but...
Shen walked toward Candy.
I can see Shen is already on board, so I am too.
Kshaxa interrupted.
Whisk, make sure you get my number on there as well, in case you need me for anything.
Sure thing.
Candy didn't want to forget something she intended to ask.
Both of you, if I ever go on an adventure, can I count on you two for assistance?
Of course. Shen and I really have nothing better to do.
I feel it's the least I can do after the scare last night. You've got my number now.
Xaxa shook both of their hands as a minimalist goodbye gesture. Candy noticed a large scar on one of his arms.
What is this from?
Oh, it's nothing. Well, no, it isn't. It's...
He sighed and thought back.
I had to activate Fresh Meal to prevent myself from bleeding out. But I didn't have any way of doing it. It's a long story. Well, the important thing is that I had to eat part of myself to do it. My ability doesn't heal wounds like that. So I had to get reconstructive surgery. Luckily, this was after I met Liban, so I was able to take advantage of his medical staff.
Don't go eating yourself while we're away now.
Whisk jokingly made light of the affair as they left.
If they serve human meat at any restaurants in Cimeterium, give it a try. Human meat is much sweeter than any other that I've had.
He shouted to them as they walked away. Shen only glanced back at Xaxa once. Xaxa could see the look in his eyes. They were both beasts, both predators. The night before could have gone much differently than it had, as they both non-verbally communicated to each other. Xaxa spoke to himself, but it was intended for Shinaga.
If I wanted you guys dead, you wouldn't have ever noticed my approach.
He thought back on the fight. Xaxa almost never fights to damage his opponents until after he's seen their Nen abilities. This means fighting for survival, or to the death winds up looking much differently as Xaxa attacks with his teeth more, aiming to maim and disarm his opponent by damaging their body to the point where they can't fight back. He learned to do this from his brother. Though his brother doesn't care about his opponent, Tharzith will prevent anyone from ever using a Hatsu against him in any way he can think of during a fight. Though Tharzith himself has no Hatsu either. Candy looked at the paper as they headed towards Cimeterium. On it was a list of names with brief descriptions of their abilities and a small picture of their faces. Some of them had sections about their personalities. Candy wondered if this was what Xaxa's book looked like and what hers and Whisk's entries said. Based on the files and data collected from the city, Chief Rether, Detective Blound, Gorik Huntsman, and Kasumi Matsumoto were able to check several places the previous night simultaneously, to no avail. This morning, they were preparing to check two more abandoned buildings in the city to see if they had been used before. With the storm coming, they thought this might be their last chance to catch them before they take a boat and leave the island. Kasumi Matsumoto and Detective Blound were heading to one location while Chief Rether and Gorik Huntsman were heading to another. They were checking to see if maybe the criminals were using one as a hideout. Both pairs took squad cars.
So, Detective Blound, tell me about yourself.
What's the matter? Don't like quiet car rides?
I think it would be good to get to know the other people here. Right now I've got you, so...
I think you were hoping to get paired with Gorik.
He laughed a little.
Officially, the chief said one of the four should be paired with a visitor so that at least one of us knows their way around. But unofficially, I think the chief wanted some time with Gorik also.
What's that mean?
He's too embarrassed to do it in front of his subordinates like me, so he's probably asking for an autograph right this second.
In the other car, the chief was driving.
So, Gorik, how do you like Cimeterium?
To be honest, Chief, it's a little bit at sorts with itself.
I don't disagree with you there.
I mean, when you look up, you can still see the sky no problem, and yet everyone here seems to treat it like a metropolis or sorts. It's caught in the middle of being a massive city and being a small town. It's almost having an identity crisis, really.
That's a good way of putting it.
No offense. I know how much you like it here.
None taken.
Chief, the way you protect this city... I take it you were born here.
Nah, close though. I moved here when I was a kid, so I might as well have been born on Cowtip.
Ah, it's like you're one of the only people that treats this place like their home.
That's because I'm one of the only people in the city that thinks of this place as their home. Most people travel here for work and wind up staying here because they get stuck. They develop a resentment for the island. What do you think, as a traveler?
It's tough to say. I don't really develop bonds with locations since I move around so much. I guess you could say that I've become detached in a way.
So, what's the most exotic place you've been to?
Now, you're starting to remind me of Officer Lamino.
Sorry about that. I've lived here for almost my entire life. All my memories are here.
Lamino was born here, right?
Yeah, good kid. Too young to have any meaningful experience, but straight as an arrow. And with just enough ambition to gun for my job, eventually.
He good at his job?
As good as you can be with nothing to do most of the time.
Rather laughed.
We have to find him.
I can't believe he would do this.
Something's not right.
You call them?
They must not be at the station.
What about Blount?
His phone must be dead again.
That asshole better start charging it more.
You stay here. I'll go looking for him.
You shouldn't go alone.
Someone's got to stay with him.
Fine. Just go. But be careful. We don't want any more injuries.
An officer left the West Cemeterium Medical Center shortly after. Anya and Virgil were now in the southernmost village around Cemeterium, near the border of the forest and above the lower docks of Cowtip.
That was some fight last night.
It was very educational.
Anya had gleaned what she needed to know during the fight.
Guess we'll have to keep this guy at least.
Virgil was referring to Officer Lamino. His control ability only lasts 6 hours, but with the help of Anya, he was able to recapture him several times throughout the night to regain control each time. A ways away, two men were watching Anya and Virgil after having followed them to this village. They had seen part of the fight last night and had taken an interest in the two. Candy and Whisk were nearing the city, both riding on Shen to conserve energy, though Shen was not running at full speed to make the trip last only a minute or two. Instead, it was a leisurely pace so that he wouldn't tire himself out. She made the call to Liban.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Who is this lady asking for?
Liban Eupalinus?
Oh, that's me, all right.
His tone changed to a slightly deeper, more calm voice.
And what is it you want with me?
Candy was away from her phone, talking to Whisk.
Geez, is everyone Xoxa knows a creep too?
She held the phone back to her ear.
Xoxa told me to...
Xoxa, hold on.
He put her on hold.
The nerve of this guy.
Xoxa did give the impression he was a bit loopy.
Whisk was trying to keep her calm. Liban was dialing for Xoxa. Back in the forest, Xoxa was walking briskly through some trees, biding time before his next meal when his phone rang.
Yeah?
You gave my number to some random girl?
She's not random. She's looking for the hunter's friend.
Is she attractive at least?
Attractive.
Liban was signaling his staff to leave the room.
I forgot who I was talking to. What does she look like?
Well...
Xoxa thought back on it as he stopped walking to think. He scared off an herbivore.
She's fit. Ready for a fight. She's good at cooking. But you can tell she hunts regularly. Oh, she's a hunter as well. She's a hunter and a hunter.
I get it. At first I was mad at you for giving my number away like that, but now that I think of it, if some fit woman needs my help, who am I to turn her down? Since she's a hunter, maybe she needs a hatsu as well. I could always look past her money and let her pay it back with a favor, like so many other customers, you know? Yeah. I think it would be best to dip into some altruism every once in a while, you know?
Xoxa was getting bored. He stopped focusing on Liban and started watching an insect take apart another insect on a log near him.
Hey, Liban. She's pretty young, so go easy on her, okay?
How young we talking?
Like 19.
She's a woman. You need to stop going easy on people.
She is a good fighter. Her nen tasted delicious, too.
Okay.
Liban then hung up on Xoxa and switched lines back to Candy.
Oh, you're back?
Candy tried not to sound mad.
Yeah, so Xoxa tells me you're a hunter.
And he tells me you're manipulative.
Fair enough. What do you want to know?
Liban dropped the games. It was clear there was no veneer to uphold anymore.
Where do I begin on my search?
In Cemeterium, there's going to be a guy who they visited. Someone you can buy information from. They will have bought some information there, you can guarantee it. That guy'll probably have directed them to a place where a group can stay without going broke. However, you're probably going to need to buy it from him. In a pawn shop near the Grand Hotel, he runs his whole operation. Now, on to you.
Candy hung up. She didn't want to deal with him anymore, but at least she got the information she needed.
Where are we going?
Whisk was asking so that she'd tell Shen.
The Grand Hotel or something like that.
You think there'll be lots of people there?
She could tell he sounded worried.
I hope not.
She was trying to comfort him and quell his anxiety. They headed for the center of Cemeterium. Candy looked at the paper to take a look at its contents again. It read, Rafaji formed this group on the principle of combining efforts and strength to supplant each other's weaknesses and defeat enemies and accomplish goals beyond the reach of the individuals in the group. Notable abilities include moderate physical strength, good improvisational tactics, and a powerful emission-based hatsu that emits a stream of nen that both burns and shocks. It can be increased in power by reciting a particular phrase. Kamita Aster. She's the morale of the group, and often the attraction of their romantic advances. Notable abilities include her amazing reflexes and two powerful conjuration hatsus. The first was to conjure a cage around an enemy, and the second was to conjure a protective wall in front of herself. She had many of the group's kills through her expert knife handling. Kalns. Last name is unknown. He was the sentinel of the group. His hatsu, to instantly switch places with someone else, meant he was the brunt of almost all attacks. It was thanks to Kometa's wall that he wouldn't die, that and his own physical strength and endurance. Haslodi, poison's expert. He's a sadistic researcher who enjoys watching different chemicals affect the body in different, often gruesome ways. Hatsu is unknown, though it probably has something to do with immobilizing or reducing mobility of someone. Difei Volkor, speedy killer. She's remarkably fast and smart enough to know what to do with it. Her hatsu is one of the most used in the group's toolbox. She can use it to speed herself up or another in the group. She is responsible for many of their successes in battle. Jeremiah Stout. Support member. Got his ability from Liban. Their tactician, he was responsible for their planning most of the time. Favored ambushing techniques. Hatsu is simplistic, utilizing his rather poor nen to force someone to lock eyes with him until Jeremiah blinks. It was a distraction tool for the group to land their debilitating abilities before their target could counter. Used a standard, store-bought handgun for defense. Sonny Ishikawa. Got his ability from Liban as well. He can make everyone's vision and hearing within a certain area surrounding himself bogged down with hallucinations. Excellent wrestler. Was the group's connection to various black market vendors around the world. Maida. Only has one name. Received a hatsu from Leiden that gave him the ability to heal many wounds by touch. The most quiet of the lot, he was rather frustrated with some of the members' recklessness, but was very capable in close quarters combat. The note also mentions that the group may have more members, and that some may have left or been killed, but that this was the group when Leiden last saw them. It also mentions that the name of the hunter looking for Rafa, and by extension the whole group, is named Hon Cronus. Leiden mentions that he will need to be contacted through Rafa, though it is suspected that Hon is on Cowtip as well.
Pretty diverse.
Candy mentioned to Whisk.
Do you think they're decent enough people?
Can't say based on this. I'm not sure Leiden would be the best judge either.
She noticed Whisk seemed worried.
So is Ada crowd?
Whisk, realizing he told her about his aversion to crowds, didn't want to make her feel responsible for his discomfort.
Oh no, it's fine. I mean, I've got you and Shen to distract me anyways. What could possibly go wrong?
Candy felt anxious still. It was almost vicariously through Whisk, in fact. Dahlia and Lahara were eating breakfast. A roasted fish omelette was what the two split, as neither happened to be hungry. They had eaten snacks at one of the night attractions they visited last night. Hopping along from place to place, the three of them, Alexander included, managed to visit pawn shops, dancing clubs, bars that would let them in, and exotic hangouts. Places full of oddly colored lights and rare jewelry on display. Dahlia spent more time eating the complimentary food than Lahara. Lahara was perplexed how such a small island could attract such fancy wares. It was the kind of stuff that reminded her of her past life, so to speak. She always managed to remember just what kind of bustling city Cimeterium was, and the troves of opportunities to sell to the bored higher-ups at the businesses being run here. Thinking on this, she was reminded of one such possibility of her usage of time, the mayor.
Lahara, do you enjoy doing that kind of stuff often?
Lahara finished what she was chewing on.
Well, yes. I've come to be used to it, actually. It almost makes me nostalgic. You had a good time, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I had all sorts of fun. It was tiring. But I've never had a night out like that.
Pretty soon, it will be one of the only things you can think of when someone asks you what you enjoy doing.
Dahlia thought about that. She wondered what Lahara's normal life might be like.
So what's your home like?
Lahara was quiet, sipping water.
To be honest, it was lavish.
Was?
She looked at Dahlia, wheels churning in her head.
It wouldn't hurt to tell you.
I am Lahara of House Nalaka.
What?
Lords of Teardrop Isle. I'm nobility.
Dahlia sat stunned.
Oh, I should have...
Ex-nobility. My country has gone through a revolution of sorts. My family has lost all of its land and power.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Don't be. Now I get to travel and do all sorts of things. I can be self-made, open up my own business, see new lands, you name it.
People at a nearby table heard her voice escalating during those last sentences. Lahara returned to normal volume as Dahlia found herself eating again. Lahara continued,
What about you?
Me?
She twirled her fork against some food.
My home is nothing, really. Just farmland. My family were well-known crop traders, and I just wanted my own life.
I can understand that.
So I became a hunter.
Wait, you're a hunter? What kind?
I don't really know.
Well, why'd you become one?
Dahlia left her home, vowing not to return till she made a name for herself. However, she was embarrassed to admit it.
To get stronger, or something.
She trailed off.
I like the sound of that, actually.
Thank you.
Dahlia was now fighting the thought of what might happen if she just shoved the fork she was holding into her esophagus, pinning the food in her throat with her fork in an ironic gesture of pointless symbolism. Lahara saw the color drain from Dahlia's face.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. Just had something stuck in my throat.
Dahlia was worried again about her thoughts taking over.
I think we should invite Alexander along with us for the day. He seemed fun enough. I also really want to see if he's all talk or not. You like dresses, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what ours will look like. It'll be a great piece of our adventures on Cowtip to bring home with us.
Dahlia shook her head, but she was not yet ready to return home. She'd need to have accomplished something first, otherwise she couldn't face her parents who've accomplished so much with so little. Outside, Zero and Maxwell were walking, Max still placing flyers as they went. The police station would be a much farther walk than the bar that Cern would be waiting at. This was the moment he decided to meet with Cern before anything else. At the very least, he'd get to see the kinds of other people here on the island.
Good thing we split a room. I wouldn't have been able to afford one on my own.
How's the job hunt going?
Same as usual. When we get to the bar, I'll buy you a drink as a form of thank you if you'd like.
Thanks, but I'll prefer to be sober for what I'm about to do. I don't want anything clouding my abilities.
Oh, good thing. I actually don't think I could afford a drink right now.
Maxwell laughed nervously. They continued their walk along, rounding a corner to the site of the bar. Inside, Alexander was asking the bartender if he'd heard anyone talking about a late seamstress who had reportedly lived here. The bartender seemed annoyed just to be asked any questions and was of no help to Alexander. He turned to think over his next order of business on his quest, his view fixed on the entrance just as two people walked through the door. Zero entered and immediately began scanning the room. He did not see Cern, so he took a seat with Maxwell, who then made a decision to ask for water. Quenching his thirst would be the next best thing to receiving a call, he felt. Alexander thought that anyone might be a good enough opportunity for information.
So, you two from Cowtip?
Maxwell was surprised. He hadn't even gotten the bartender's attention yet.
Do we stand out that much?
Well, I won't lie. You do. But everyone around here seems to stand out as well. When everyone stands out, it's like everyone's just your average civilian.
What about you?
I'm just looking for something.
Me too. A job. If you've got anything, I'll take it.
He thought back to Zero asking him last night if there was any job he wouldn't do, to which he had replied,
People weren't meant to be in offices all day, nor were they in shit. I honestly can't think of which is worse.
If Alexander had asked the same question, he would have the answer prepared already. He didn't, though.
You wouldn't happen to know of a seamstress named Vivienne Claude, would you?
Don't think I've heard the name before. Maybe I have heard of her, though.
You'd remember if you did, that's for sure.
Maxwell figured as much.
So you're looking for her? Old flame?
Nothing like that. She's actually dead now.
Oh, good luck finding her then.
Maxwell wasn't sure if his light-hearted attempt was appropriate.
Seems like finding anyone in this place is a rather difficult matter.
Alexander was letting some frustration through.
Ha! You're telling me.
A drunk chimed in, clearly overhearing their conversation.
The police won't even help either.
Well, it can't be any harder than finding a job here.
Maxwell extended his hand.
The name's Maxwell.
Alexander met him halfway.
I'm Alexander Minte. I hope that we can find some kind of luck.
The joking went well with Maxwell, who finally got some water.
You shouldn't be so trusting,
a voice quietly said into Alexander's ear. Alexander ignored it, for he knew who it was. No one else would be seeing who was talking, but it wasn't a voice meant to be ignored. After all, he had Alexander's best intentions in mind.
One false step and I will have to make a scene of this bar, so be careful now,
the voice continued. Alexander attempted to read Maxwell. He seemed to be as honest as he let on. A man with a true objective and a good heart, as Alexander would see it. The invisible entity made of needles speaking into Alexander's ear, on the other hand, did not place as much stock in his trust. The being's name was Needles, and was the creation of Alexander's Nen. Needles was looking around the bar and noticed Zero, who seemed to be staring right at him. He tried to get Alexander to notice as well.
So, Maxwell, who's your friend?
Oh, that's Zero. He's a good guy. Helped me out, actually.
Before Maxwell could continue, Cern burst out of the bathroom. He immediately took notice of Zero, nearer the door than he. Changing topics along with the new revelation.
Oh, that's Cern. He and Zero have a date. You should come along if you've got nothing else going on.
Sure. Why not?
Alexander seemed curious as to these two and their mysterious feud.
I can think of a few reasons why not.
Needles reminded Alexander of just the variety of people that might be new to the island. Cern sat down at the table with Zero.
So, when do you want to start? Not here.
The two got up. Maxwell and Alexander followed outside. Alexander checked his phone as if expecting something. This prompted Maxwell to check his, as he was definitely wondering how effective his flyers were being. The group meandered towards the meadows between Cimeterium's western border and the forest lining the half of the island. The fields were vast and open, not a monument in sight and no distinguishing artifacts. They walked out a bit further, leaving the city out of the question. Maxwell and Alexander distanced themselves. Zero and Cern were now apart enough, and both ready.
My mission is to overcome Cern,
Zero thought to himself, which generated a coin in his hand. Zero flipped the coin as Cern conjured knives as his poison knives ability. Zero thought to himself that the mission wasn't too skewed to favor one side of the coin over the other, so he should be all right regardless of what two sides of the same coin ends up on. One side of the coin has a trident on it, while the other has a ring, and Cern made sure to take note of that while it was in the air. He wasn't sure what would happen if he moved in too close, so he stayed back with his knives drawn. The coin landed with the trident facing up.
Devil longer it is,
he said to himself as the coin then displayed the number 3 on the face before disappearing. A suit of armor then manifested around him, starting with the joints and moving across his limbs. Its design was red and black and covered most of his body, though openings were clear to Cern. Zero plotted based on the armor he received. In his head, he thought quickly as he strafed Cern, who was planning how to react, but still wary of what the armor meant in battle.
With devil armor, I'll have stronger offensive capabilities and longer endurance, but I'll need to close the gap in order to hit him. If he's too quick, it's all for naught. I also need to make sure to hold back. I don't want to kill him just yet.
Cern was thinking similarly.
I need to move in quickly to strike, but I have to make sure not to do anything permanent.
The blades Cern was holding were capable of poisoning their targets. The poison, however, was not deadly in small doses, especially to someone like Zero. Cern would need to rely on several strikes before the poison could take effect in battle. Zero was sure that Cern would counter his first attack, and if Cern was faster, he could land a strike. He'd need to rely on the armor to protect him without the speed of angel armor. It was no use. No matter what Zero did, he'd find himself in the same situation. So he decided to see what Cern would do, given this opportunity. He rushed forward, which made his speed apparent to Cern, who then realized he could control the pace of the fight with his movement. This would be crucial in waiting until the poison took effect. Zero, not wanting to use too much Nen, was going to rely on devil armor to bait out Cern's abilities. Cern waited until Zero was just about to reach striking distance and moved around his attack, lashing out with a light slice at one of the openings in the devil armor. Without the armor, Cern would have been able to deal a deadly blow there, but all he could manage was a thin scratch in Zero's flesh. Some poison would have assuredly entered Zero's body, but it would be so small that his natural antibodies would probably be able to rid it with enough time.
I'd bet you, but I don't have the money for it.
Needles enjoyed Maxwell's comment. Both he and Alexander were studying Cern and Zero's abilities intently. Maxwell was enjoying the show, but he wouldn't soon forget either of their strengths, and even some of their weaknesses, too. Following the exchange, Cern realized he'd need to move on the offensive to spread enough poison. He made quick attacks around Zero, who couldn't keep up with counters and could not cover all openings. Cern was able to make another two slashes as he found more openings. To prevent the situation from continuing too long, Zero thought of a new approach. If he couldn't manage a direct hit, he was going to opt for an indirect attack. While Cern was making another pass, Zero punched the ground several times. Both of them were engulfed in flying dirt and dust as the grass was submitted deep into the soil. Zero then dove out to witness the situation from an outside perspective. Looking at the cloud, he saw Cern run out from the cloud, disoriented. Zero made a break for him to his left before he could regain his composure. With a running punch, he swept Cern up into the air. Instead of giving chase, he let him fall. Something did not feel right about the way his punch connected. He turned around to find Cern lunging from behind. Zero managed to dodge the knife just in time with a dive backwards. Zero had attacked a clone conjured with Cern's aura diffusion ability. Unfortunately for Cern, a trick like that won't fool him again. Cern had expertly kept the ability a secret till just the right moment. It led to Maxwell, Alexander, Needles, and Zero all wondering if there were any more tricks up Cern's sleeve.
So you like spicy foods, huh?
Kasumi, if there's any food I like, chances are I like it better with some heat, you know?
What about the chief?
The squad car pulled up to a lot.
He likes spicy foods?
Detective Blound exited the car.
He's kept this one up his sleeve for a while. He'd kill me if he knew I told you.
What is it?
Okay. But he hates that I know, and no other subordinates know.
He built it up, and now he had to deliver.
Chief cries, I mean fully tears up, at the scent of a food he thinks might be spicy, even if it isn't.
Wow, that's really something.
Kasumi was surprised a distinguished man like Chief Rether would keep secrets like that. The two walked up to the building, Blound reverting the tone back to respecting the chief.
Really something, how he figured this out, though.
Kasumi understood.
Absolutely. Taking the testimony from Baruka, his knowledge of the city and the files on the case, realizing that they must have some similar set of information to be able to pick these locations.
To think that a company up and leaving like that leaves behind so many waves, so many bitter employees and cleared out properties. It makes sense that one of them would find a way to use the properties for something, especially since some of them turned to criminal ways.
There was a smell.
Damn, Blound, do you smell that?
Talk about spice.
Smells kind of familiar, though, right?
Yeah, I've definitely smelled this before.
She tried to decipher it.
Like a burning dumpster or something.
But without the smoke and plenty of gas.
Blound's words made her guess.
You think someone's burned something in there?
Maybe not. This particular garage is a personal storage for a CEO. I think it is possible the gas smell could be from the cars kept here.
It's always the ones with the nicest stuff that take the least care, I suppose.
Kasumi felt it was time to trudge through the stench. Kasumi went to the window to peek in while Blound went to the door to check if it could be opened.
It's locked.
The window's painted over, too.
We should call Gorick and the chief and wait for backup, just in case.
He took out his phone.
Damn, it's dead.
Should I call the chief?
He doesn't have a mobile. Here.
He handed her a paper with something scribbled.
Give Gorick a call.
Kasumi and Blound went across the street to keep their distance while they waited for the rest to show up. She wondered why the smell was so easily noticeable from the outside. No windows seemed to be broken. Nothing else was open. It bugged her. For the time being, Blound and her would need to wait, but she was ready to enter and wanted to see just what was going on. Anya and Virgil were discussing what to do with Lamino.
I'm sure the other police are looking for him.
We can use him as bait, probably.
Anya was spitballing.
That might be chaotic.
Virgil smiled. Last night, Anya and Virgil were in the middle of their fight, with Virgil flying and Anya on a roof, keeping away from Lamino and the rest of the people under Virgil's control. Anya, unsure if her grenades would impact Virgil through those he controlled, decided to take the time to experiment while Virgil was under the effect of paranoia and doubt, thanks to her grenade from before. She loaded two grenades up, both with the feeling of a fear of heights. This was clearly meant to debilitate Virgil, who was currently flying. She let one go on a passing-by person under Virgil's influence. It did not seem to have an effect on Virgil.
The connection must be one way between them. I bet if I get Virgil with something, it might affect all of the people he controls.
The problem shifted as she now needed to hit Virgil while he flew. She could set her grenade to smoke and hope it gets him, or she could manipulate the grenade mid-air to follow him. It might be a waste of Nen to do so, as she was confident that she wouldn't be able to make it to him with that method.
Smoke it is,
she quietly declared. However, before she could let her grenade out, she noticed a swarm of people closing in on her. Lamino was one of them. She'd need a way to disorient them all and decided to imbue one grenade with a powerful fear of the dark. Since it was night, this should give a clear answer to if her grenades affected them. She rolled it down over the edge of the roof she was hiding on. It was time detonated and managed to get most of the group. When she peered over, she saw some huddling in fear and others running to hide. It seemed to have worked. She took the moment to toss her smoke grenade up into the air to inject the fear of heights into him. When the smoke detonated and the cloud moved near, his paranoia caused him to run away from the cloud of smoke. His fear had helped him in this instance. The doubt she forced on him made him want to end the fight, but there was a new problem. Chaos had interrupted in the protesters as the sounds of grenades going off created fear in Fisher's Paradise and the edge of Cemeterium. From a distance, it might not have seemed like anything more than protesters setting off fireworks and getting rowdy. But to those near, there was something odd afoot. The other three officers stationed there went to investigate the cause of the disorder and traced their way towards the airborne smoke. They found themselves searching through Fisher's Paradise while Anya was able to sneak by them and exit the village. When the effects on Virgil would wear off, he'd find her too, with those he controlled following slowly behind. One officer came around the corner to where Anya was and found someone else. Officer Lamino was under Virgil's control and the effects of fear of the dark mixed with paranoia and doubt. As the other officer tried to reason with Lamino to get him to lower his gun, Lamino shot, hitting the other in the stomach. Another officer came onto the scene just as Lamino was escaping but stayed with the victim instead. At this point, Alexander, Lahara and Dahlia were inside a popular spot with music too loud to hear the gunshot, while Zero and Maxwell had entered the hotel to find a way to stay sheltered for the night. Just a couple of minutes difference and they would have heard the whole thing. Anya managed to help Virgil keep Lamino under control, but he was just as much a liability as he was an asset. Something would need to be done. There were two men who saw the whole thing, and they now approached Anya and Virgil. Law spoke first.
Impressive display last night.
The other man showed himself as Anya and Virgil took notice.
But I just have one question for you.
Hello? What is it?
Alexander's phone had rang. He answered it right away. As he was stepping away to keep his conversation private, Maxwell started ringing as well. He laughed at the coincidence and answered,
Yeah, I'll be right there. Last night was great.
Alexander was talking to Lahara, who was with Dahlia while they ate.
Who's this?
Maxwell was genuinely unsure.
Hello, Mr. Clerk. We have a job for you.